Welcome back to the Laravel podcast. Today we're talking to Marcel Posio, the founder of Botman, the framework agnostic PHP chatbot package. Try saying that 2 times 10 times fast. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Laravel podcast. This is season 3 where we're doing interviews. It's the people you know, getting to know aspects of them you never understood. Or it's also finding some people who you probably have used their tools or you've seen them, but you don't actually necessarily know who they are. Those names who you've been putting to GitHub require or to Composer require for ages, but never actually known who the person is. So the guy we have us in front of us today, I'm actually curious to see what his entire history of working with Laravel is. But the current most present one that's going on right now is connecting Laravel to chatbots and Slack bots and all this kind of stuff. And this is called Botman, but there's a lot more going on here. So first of all, we start with the point where I massacre somebody's name. And then we move on to the next point where I ask that person to say their name correctly and then introduce themselves a little bit. So Marcel Posio, that's close, not perfect. He's still smiling, so I didn't massacre too badly. Can you tell us, and I'm probably going to end up calling you just Marcel through the rest of this because it's easier for me to say. Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about kind of just real quick? You don't have to tell us your whole life story. I'll ask you all these questions, but who are you? What are you doing? What are you about? What's Botman? You know, what's your new company? And just kind of give us the basics of like, what should we know about you?
Okay. My name is Marcel Posio. I think that's at least the German pronunciation.
Okay.
I co-founded the company like in December last year.
Congratulations.
So, thank you. Very fresh. Still, I think you're one of the first people that I actually tell this in person. That's not
I got the insider
from the
track,
family
man.
And friends, because the website isn't finished yet. So And I think I'm quite around in the Laravel community for a bit.
Mm-hmm. So you've been working, I've known you just kind of generally in the Laravel community, but you're one of those people where I know that I've known you, but I don't even know how we originally connected. Now, you mentioned that we spoke together at a conference, so that might have been it, but did you have any early claims to fame in the Laravel community? Were there any packages that you did earlier on that were more popular, or is it just that you've been around for a while that you're known? Do you know?
Well, I did a few. There's one, I think it's called Teamwork for some user team association package.
Yeah, I remember that.
But they're all a bit older.
When did you first start using Laravel?
2.5 years ago, I think. I wasn't doing that much PHP like back in the days. So at least not with frameworks. So at the companies I work with, they were using self-built frameworks, which are usually crap.
Yep.
You do this once in your lifetime and never again. And well, I ended up at companies that did it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, we decided that we built a SaaS application and we were looking for a framework to use. And so this is pretty much the story I tell everyone when they ask me how I got into Laravel. So my boss was really into Zend because of the whole Zend ecosystem with Zend Studio and the Zend server. So I looked into Zend framework. I think it was 2. I gave it a week. I gave it really a my best shot. I even bought a book and gave it a try.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, I looked around for other frameworks and discovered Laravel. And what I did with Zend framework in a week, I did with Laravel in like an hour in the evening on the couch.
I love it.
So this was like the main motivation to use Laravel then.
Got it. Okay. And I do remember that one of the things that originally kind of I saw is that you were doing the Laravel notifications thing. Were you, did you help kind of like co-manage that?
Yeah.
Or manage that or?
With Mohammed and Freek. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Got it. So stepping back for a second, I it's so funny because I try not to go too deep in my own like ethnological and linguistic curiosities in the podcast because I know everybody else isn't quite as interested as I am. So one of the things I actually asked Marcel before we were on the call was, how is your English so good? And, you know, we went to that a little bit. But I must admit that based on your name, it sounds French to me.
Yeah.
But I know that you live in Germany. Are you French origin living in Germany?
No,
or am I just totally
I hear
that
a lot
up?
Because I think it's also because of my first name. because people try to pronounce it French. So I'm like Marcel Posio or something.
That's exactly
like that.
What I expected you to say when you first told me. Yeah.
So as far as I can tell, the name, we can't trace it back that much. I think it's just like two generations and it's from Eastern Europe. So that's pretty much all I can say.
Okay. But you're German. You live in Germany. Where do you live in Germany?
Near Düsseldorf.
Okay.
Which is near Cologne. So
Köln.
Köln, genau.
I took a little bit of German in high school and college and promptly forgot the majority of it, but just enough that I can read a couple German storybooks to my kids and try to get a little bit of German heritage in for them. So, my sister was in a little bookstore, local bookstore, and found this, what's it called? I think it's like Sweet Dreams or something like that. Träume süß or something like
Süße
that.
Süße Träume. Oder so?
Anyway, it's this little kind of cute little blue book, and I read it to my son over and over and over and over again, and you know my pronunciation was really bad on day one, but over time I got good at it. And then some point, my wife found the exact same book in English, and so now with both of my kids, I read them both of the books back and forth. But my daughter is understanding enough English right now that when I read the German version to her, she's like, "Wait a minute, I don't understand this one." Like she gets mad at me, goes and gets the English version. So anyway, cool. So I do remember there was another big one, the API documentation generator.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that project.
Well, it's a tool that you can pull into your Laravel application, and it will basically just read the routes that you define. So you can call it and give it like the prefix of the route that you want documentation for, and we'll scan the routes and create like this stripe-like documentation so that you have the documentation on the left and then code examples how you can interact with the API on the right. And it does it by just parsing the routes and then reading the documentation of the code.
And is it its own thing, or is it generating like one of the pre-existing kind of styles? You know what I mean? Because I've never actually gotten to use it, but we are always looking for API documentation generators.
It's using, it's a theme. It's called Slate.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's using this. Yeah.
Cool. Very cool. And I'll put links in the show notes. So, but the main two, I think that I kind of see associated with your name right now are that API doc generator. And then of course, Botman, which we'll talk about in a minute. So those are things. And then we've got your company. So let's real quick talk about what is Botman, where'd it come from? And then also what's your company? And then we're going to dig into the backstory. So Botman, what is Botman? What does it do? And where did it come from?
Okay. I start with where it came from. So it was really just coincidence. Late 2016, I guess, Slack announced that they now have a new HTTP-based API. It's called Event API. So it's basically, before that, when you wanted to react to Slack events, like new messages, you had to connect through WebSockets. Mm-hmm. And the new API was basically just webhooks. So whenever a new action appears, Well, I mean, if you have a large Slack team, it will blast a lot of events to your server.
right.
So when I heard that Slack announced this API, I just thought that it would be cool to have a PHP API that wraps around it and have like an elegant API around it. So sort of what Laravel is all about. And then apply this to Slack. And then I did this. I open sourced it. I think it was called just Slackbot at the time.
Okay.
And it lay around there for 3 or 4 months. I didn't do anything with it. And then I came up with the idea that it might be cool to connect multiple services to it. So not just Slack, but also Telegram and Facebook Messenger. So that's like the main thing with Botman. I think it's one of the only, or maybe it's the only PHP library that actually allows you to connect to multiple messenger services.
Yeah. If it's not the only, it's the only one that matters. That's what I think.
So it allows you to connect to these services with one API and reuse your code.
So I think one of the hardest things for people to think about chatbots, I mean, everyone kind of hears like chatbots, the cool new thing, whatever. And often it's really difficult to understand in what context would I actually want to use this? What are some, so I think some of the simplest ones we've seen are, when I hook into a CodeShip integration, something that already exists, but What are some of the, either in your personal use of it or in seeing other people use it, what are some of the most compelling uses of chatbots, whether it's in Slack or Telegram or whatever else that you've seen, to kind of help people's imagination get started a little?
I think the problem is that people always associate chatbots with these super artificial intelligence systems mm-hmm. that understand whatever the user wants. And in my opinion, it's just a different interface for your application. Mm-hmm. So it's a conversational interface for your application. And what I've seen that was built with Botman a lot is like websites for example, for insurance companies. And on their website, they have this chat bubble that you know maybe from Intercom. Mm-hmm. And what it does, it guides you through the website. So when you click mm-hmm. on a button, the chatbot opens and asks you a question related to the action that you triggered when you clicked on the button. Mm-hmm. So that's one use case. And I think...
I want to stop you for a second. So when I think of a chatbot, what I think about is something that allows someone to use a pre-existing chat system like Facebook Messenger or something else to interact with their backend API. What you're describing kind of sounds like an entirely manual process where you just used webhooks to hook into your app, right? Am I missing what you're talking about?
No, so that's also possible. With Botman, it's a web driver, so you can just connect it to your own API. You send the message from your user to your own API and reply back.
Okay, got it.
But in the end, that's what happens with like Telegram or Facebook too. Yeah.
So really anything that has to do with sending and receiving messages to your user in a chat-like format.
Yeah, right.
Regardless of which chat format they're using. Okay.
Exactly.
And I think the on-page one is just so clear of an example. I mean, everyone, you know, has used a website with Intercom on it or one of Intercom's competitors at some point. So I get that one and I think that's super compelling. And I'm happy to know that if I need to build that, still reach for Botman. That's cool. I wouldn't have known that until you said that. Have you seen people use... I think the hard thing for me is that when I think about Telegram, when I think about Facebook Messenger, I very infrequently think about interacting with someone who has enough money to have an API. I think of my friends. You know, I'm sending a message to my friend messages me back. Have you seen or heard of really compelling use cases where people are using traditional chat systems outside of Slack? I think Slack, we'll talk about in a second, but has anybody done anything interesting that you know of with Telegram or Messenger, or are those a little more aspirational at this point?
Messenger is used a lot for more marketing kind of services. So, mm-hmm. For example, TechCrunch has mm-hmm. this. Well, it's a chatbot where you can, when you sign up, you can register for different topics from their RSS feeds.
Whoa.
And then you get...
They're using it to publish information out to people
exactly.
And people are subscribing.
Yeah. So every evening, so you can select topics and then the time.
Wow.
And every evening I get like the top 10 stories from TechCrunch into
you
the
just
messenger.
Blew my mind. So my son just started a podcast.
Yeah.
Shameless plug, stoppersonscience.com. And I have a whole bunch of people who I grew up with who are completely uncomputer savvy. And they're all saying, well, how do I subscribe to a podcast? And I'm like, oh gosh, how am I going to handle this? I could build a little light Laravel or Lumen app that subscribes to the RSS feed of the podcast and allows people to authenticate their messenger information and pushes every new episode to their messenger inbox.
Yeah, right.
Holy crap, you just blew my mind. That's amazing. That is so cool. That is so clever. That opens up so many things for people to subscribe. Because everybody, you know, all your non-tech savvy friends, all your your mom, your grandma, all them, they all have Facebook, which means they all have Messenger.
Yeah. And even, I think, even more like the younger generation, because they don't have MacBooks or laptops. They just have mm-hmm. a smartphone and use Messenger to communicate. So.
Do you know, and I'm sorry, I'm just going in the weeds here, but I'm so fascinated. If somebody doesn't use Messenger and they send something to like a Messenger authenticated thing, does it show up on the web interface in their little like messages thing in Facebook website?
You mean if they don't use the Messenger application?
If somebody doesn't have an iPhone, but they go to Facebook.com on their browser every day, can they do Messenger interactions using the little... you have messages.
Too.
Okay, so it's the same thing in Facebook's mind. Man, I need to pause for a moment. This is so cool. Okay, so broadcasting makes a ton of sense. Broadcasting information, in some ways you have some of the value, but a lot more configurability of like an RSS feed through multiple mediums of subscription. That makes a ton of sense, and I get that now.
Plus, I think Maybe this will change over time, but right now the click rates are much higher because it's not that overused as email newsletters.
Right.
So
yeah.
Huh. Yeah, for example, with
it feels
the
more personal too, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I mean, it feels, even though you know that you're not actually talking to someone at the mm-hmm. company, it feels like you're interacting with the company, yeah. Or with
That's
brands.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and so the whole marketing thing is really popular on Facebook. So also for artists, they have chatbots that, you know, you can ask, where's the next concert? And the user feel like they are talking to, I don't know, Beyonce, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I was just going to ask about questions. So that one right there would be like, it would feel like a little bit of natural language processing.
Yeah.
But if you can do some of that, then you can have like, ask questions of our whatever bot or whatever. And that makes sense too. So you imagine that you are working for some big company, like an insurance company maybe, and they say, you want to ask us a question? Here, hook up to our messenger bot and you can ask blah, blah, blah. The messenger bot parses out using some basic natural language processing. So the messenger bot is basically Botman hooked in your API. The API, your Laravel app, takes the questions, tries to process them, tries to look up an answer, and then sends a message back to that person. So that Botman would be the interface layer in between.
Yeah, right.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Slack makes the most sense for our context. I think we're all sitting and using work,
yes.
Slack and work every day. And it seems like Slack is adding more and more things that you can do every time, you know, buttons at the bottom and stuff like that. What is the most interesting thing that you have built or seen built with Slack integrations with Botman?
I think it's also interesting because Slack got, I think they moved away from the term chatbot a while ago. And
oh, yeah?
I think they just called it application.
Mm-hmm.
And they even integrated like forms that open up with drop, Slack boxes, drop downs. So I haven't seen that many Slack bots using Botman. There's one, I forgot the name. Who built it, but he built a Slack game. It's
cool.
Like a dice rolling game. It's called Liar's Dice, I think.
Okay. So I obviously could talk about Botman the whole time, but this isn't actually about Botman.
Yeah.
This is about you. So, okay. So Botman is amazing. There's all sorts of interesting stuff. You also have given, was your, do you know if your Laravel EU talk is online? I don't know.
Yeah,
I haven't
online.
Actually watched those.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So I'll put a link up to your Botman talk, which is called From Zero to Multiplatform Chatbot with Botman. So I'll put a link up to that in as well. So let's move on to you. So the first place I always start with everybody is, when did you first get interested in computers, or when did you first get access to a computer? So what did your original kind of exposure to computers?
I think the first memory that I have from a computer was I was sitting, I might be like 6 or 7, mm-hmm. sitting in the living room with my father, and I don't remember what kind of computer it was, but we had a book with games. So if you wanted to play a game, there was the source code of
yep.
the game in the book.
Was it BASIC?
Yeah, it was. So yeah. And so you had to like type it in and mm-hmm. then you got the game.
Mm-hmm.
What I remember, maybe that's also the reason why I remember it, is my father was sitting there and typing everything in. And I don't know, I just came at the power adapter and the whole thing crashed.
No.
Yeah, he was kind of frustrated.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
And I assume that was like one of those black and green old DOS yeah. boxes. Very cool.
So this is the first memory of sitting
yeah,
in front
so,
of a computer.
So early you had, I mean, and I try not to call out people's ages too much, but I think that you're around my age, around 33. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
32,
you know,
in April 33. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we're almost exactly the same age. So in our generation, it was not all that common, at least in the US, I don't know about in Germany, for people to have a home computer. I mean, it was, you know, when we were that young. Was, since your father was the one doing this, was your father, was he a geek, or he's a
no,
programmer of any sort?
All. No.
Okay.
No.
But he just happened to have
he
one?
He was always interested in it.
Yeah.
But, well, not so much that he really wanted to write more code than there was in the book.
Right. So at what point did your interaction with the computer go from pulling out the plug from your dad typing in BASIC programs to you creating things on your own?
I think it was in school we had, at the programming class, we wrote Turbo Pascal.
You had, wait, what age of school are you talking about?
This is like, I think, seventh grade. So I must have been like 12, 13.
You had programming class when you were 13 years old.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. I mean, when I was in seventh grade, we had typing class. And I
with typewriters or
well no it was on it was on they were on Macs but they were oh, okay. old Macs and we'd all sit around and I would finish the Mavis Beacon thing in 5 minutes and then I'd go try to learn AppleScript and write programs that would infect all the other computers in the network and shut them all down at the same time, you know, without the teacher noticing.
Yeah.
But there's no formal programming education even in high school. The best we had was an engineering class where the teacher would let us go hack around and stuff, but certainly nothing formal. So you learned Turbo Pascal in seventh grade.
Yeah, pretty much. And then
how'd that go?
Well, I think we moved quite fast from there to Delphi, where also in the class there were like a handful of people that were always like very fast with all the tasks, and so just as you said, had a lot of time. So we developed like a Trojan horse to like open the CD trays from the other computers and stuff
exactly.
like that.
Yep. It's exactly what I was trying to do. That's awesome. Okay. So you early on, you were deep in the computers, you're writing code, you're hacking at it. When did you first get into the web?
I don't really remember what age I was, but I mean, it was like the GeoCities sites.
Yeah.
Like all these crappy.
Yeah, man. I still remember. Mine was MA/1984, I think was my first two letters of my name and then the birth year.
Yeah.
What was your first GeoCities site? Do you remember?
No, I just remember that I had like this cool hacker name. It was Dave.
With like lead speak?
Yeah, yeah. Right.
133744, whatever. Yeah.
It was a Data 2K. I don't know.
Oh, nice.
It sounded cool.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Well, 2K especially. Okay.
Yeah.
So it seems it's funny because it seems like I'm either picking people to interview who are like old head PHP dorks, or there's something consistent about folks who are kind of like helping lead in our community that a lot of us are from similar-ish generations. So I'm curious to see where that goes. But so you were doing that. You were playing around with it on the side. What did you study? Did you study that in university or?
No. So here in Germany, after you finish school, you can either go to a university or you can do like training. Mm-hmm. So you go to a company and then you have 3 years at the company. And besides working at the company, you also go to school.
Oh, is it a school provided by the government or provided by the company?
No. It's just a public school for learning the
specific
profession.
Trade.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
And so I did that to become a software engineer.
Oh, cool.
And I ended up in a company in Bochum, here in Germany. And
I don't even know how to spell that.
No.
That one's not going in the show notes.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, that's what I did. I wasn't that much into liking school that much back in the days. So pretty early on, I decided to skip the school part and rather work 5 days a week so that I can hack on some code. That's what I did, and then just did the tests on my own and learned from them on my own.
Got it. So you have a pretty straight line from being a little kid watching your dad enter QBasic programs in through, you know, learning in school and doing your own GeoCities stuff to being a software engineer and going straight in the industry. Have you at any point felt like, oh my gosh, this is not what I want to do? Or has it just been pretty clear since early on?
Yeah, it's
I'm
been
a programmer,
really clear
this is my thing.
Since early
yeah.
on. That's always
That's
what
cool.
I wanted to do. So yeah. And it's always a bit funny when I talk to people that don't really know what they want to do with their lives and what direction they want to go, because it was always really clear for me that I want to go into that direction.
Interesting. Yeah. If you today, and I know that you just started your own company in December, so hopefully this is really fresh in your head. If you today were to be able to pick exactly what you were doing day to day, if your company was successful in exactly all the ways you want it to be, what would you be doing with your time?
So right now I would say I would still love to write code.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that you talked about this also with a few other people, what to do when you're like 40 or 50 years old. Well, right now, I would say that I hope that I still want to write code at that time.
Okay. So if you found yourself in a situation where your company just, and we'll talk about your company in a second, but just took off and it's going really well, you decided to hire five people, and all of a sudden you're spending all your time doing administrative work. At that point, you think you might say, you know what, I gotta fix this. I gotta get back into the code. Is that kind of your sense of it right now?
Right now it is, yeah. But I just started fresh, and I'm really just coming from a lead developer role. So
Okay. So all right. So tell me about your company. You went right into that internship. What's your work history look like? I mean, you don't have to tell me every company, but what kind of stuff you've been doing? Have you been working primarily for software firms, or have you been working for non-software companies as a software programmer?
No, I just worked for agencies, like web agencies.
Got it.
The first one was very small, four people when I started there, which was very cool because I got to do like everything. I had to talk to customers and the clients. It was very small, so we had to do things like setting up email accounts for them. They called if they couldn't set up the email account on their mobile phone.
Yep.
And then they would come in with their phone and stuff like that.
Yep.
And yeah, the second company was also a bigger agency, but still an agency where I did, at the first one, I did PHP, and then I got a lot into Appcelerator Titanium.
I thought you'd done Titanium.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Titanium for a second. Titanium, I feel like, was one of the first like use JavaScript to write multi-platform apps.
Yeah.
How is it different and similar from something like Ionic?
Well, the main difference is that while Ionic is just HTML that gets executed on the phone in the browser or in the web view, Titanium used the JavaScript code that you wrote, and they had proxies for the native languages, for Java or Objective-C. And then the JavaScript code would call the native proxy objects that would then execute native code.
It's a little more like a predecessor of React Native. Is it still around?
It is. The company got acquired, and they still develop it. But the time Facebook announced React Native, the community just ran away and went to Facebook. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Sorry. I interrupted you. So you were doing it at that company, and then continue.
Yeah. And Titanium was also like my main motivation to work on open source in the first place. I haven't done that before, and I started developing Titanium modules, so that just small like user interface,
sort of like packages.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
user interface libraries to share, and I put them open source. And I think I did Titanium for maybe 1.5 years.
Okay,
mostly Titanium, and then also some Java and Objective-C to work on some native modules.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, I got a bit away from PHP, because also at the time there was no Composer. So the whole ecosystem wasn't as stable as it is right now.
Yeah. So what brought you back?
Well, I think it was just a client project.
Okay.
And
did they say PHP, or was it web and you had to pick, and you just picked PHP because you knew it?
Yeah, because I knew it. And also because of React Native. So when React Native was announced, Titanium just pretty much died.
But I mean, that was pretty recently, right?
Well,
like a year.
No, React Native is more than a year, I think.
Is it really? I mean, I believe you. I don't actually know. Okay, so yeah, so let's say it may have been as long time as 2015.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of times when I hear people talk about, you know, I stepped away from PHP, blah blah blah, and I finally came back, and they're in the Laravel community, a lot of them came back right around the time when Laravel 4 came out. Maybe I've just got the timeline on that wrong in my head. When did Laravel 4 come out?
Well, when I started working with Laravel, 5 came out. So I worked with 4 for about a month.
So that is what I was expecting then. Okay.
Yeah. And so we started this SaaS product at our company, and we chose to use Laravel 5 because I think the main reason was the form requests, which just blew my mind. I thought they were super cool to validate stuff. And then we decided to pick up Laravel 5 during the development with the beta. That was no good decision.
I did the same, and it was also a bad decision.
Yeah. We had to fix several things every day. Yeah. And at some point, we just pinned the dependency to one specific commit. So we knew, okay, this is working.
And you just build against that commit until he released it, and then you deal with all fixes at once.
And then it stays that way for a long time.
Yep. It's funny. Yeah, and this timeline does line up here is what I'm seeing. 4 came out in 2013, 5 came out in 2015, and React Native was announced probably at some point in 2015. So so you kind of, you were deep in Epsilon, or in Titanium, I mean. You were kind of off in that world. And interestingly, you were doing a lot of other mobile stuff. I mean, you talked about getting into Java, getting into Objective-C a little bit. So it was both Titanium, which is, you know, JavaScript, but then also the adapter worlds, which means you got to know a little Java from Android, a little bit of Objective-C for Apple. And then you all of a sudden kind of jump back into PHP, and it was Laravel 5, things were modern, Composer, all that kind of stuff. Were you still working for that same consultancy at that point?
I think, yeah, must have been sort of at the same time that I switched jobs, yeah. And I didn't do that much. I mean, I always did PHP, like in the afternoon on the couch.
Okay, got it. So it was still always like your fun time language. You weren't like, because I know a lot of people would say they left. They're like, oh, well, I got tired of PHP and I left for Rails. I got tired of PHP and I left for .NET or whatever. So you still kind of like had a soft spot in your heart for PHP the whole time.
Yeah, right. But
okay.
But not with a framework.
Yeah.
At the time. So.
Yeah.
I don't
Did
know,
you ever just... roll your own? You said your company had rolled their own. Does it have a name?
Sure. No. It didn't really have a name. No.
Never got that far.
No.
Okay. This is so you got a pretty classic story here. I mean, it's not obviously everyone's different, but there's, you know, the a lot of us left at some point, a lot of us came back at some point. But it's interesting for the amount of impact you've made with Botman, you came back to Laravel pretty recently. And Botman isn't really a Laravel framework either, right? I feel like it was tied to Laravel at some point. Is it basically just a PHP framework that does it even have a Laravel convenience layer on top of it right now?
Yeah, it does. So it is framework agnostic, but there's a piece called Botman Studio, which is basically just a blank Laravel 5.5 installation with some additional Botman like service provider and additional commands, a Tinker page to play around with it. And
yeah,
but it's not tied to Laravel.
Got it. Okay, so we've caught up. You switched consultancies, you got into Laravel 5, you built Botman, you talked about how you built Botman. So let's talk about your company. You know, we chatted on and off about it, but let's pretend that we haven't chatted at all. In December, you formed your own company, you went out on your own. Tell me about it. What's your motivation? What's your goals? What's your desires? What made you want to get out of working for other consultancies and start your own thing? And what is your own thing?
Okay. So I'm not doing this alone. I'm doing this with a former colleague. He has been a freelancer for a year now already. Mm-hmm. And already a year ago when he left the company, we were already thinking about doing something on our own. And I think the main motivation was, so when we started this SaaS application at our company, we thought about turning it into its own company, which they eventually did. So I ended up sitting in a new office with my now business partner and the CEO from this new company. And we basically sat together for like 2 years. Just like the two of us working on the product. And we just knew that the CEO back at the time was a salesperson. And how can I put it? Well, a salesperson as the CEO of a software product is difficult.
Yeah.
And so this was like the main motivation because we had a different idea of the product. Where we wanted to go with it, and it didn't turn out into that direction.
Yeah.
So we thought that, well, if we do something on our own, we can give it our best shot.
Okay. So is it a similar product to what you originally planned, but since it didn't go the way you originally planned, you're going to go now kind of build? Are you doing product work then?
So right now the company is called Beyond Code, and we are it's sort of a split. So we have, on the one hand, we do project work. Mostly we try to do it for chatbots.
Okay.
Obviously. Cool.
So you're a consultancy that builds chatbots for people as a part of what you're doing.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay.
And on the other hand, we have Botman as the library, and mm-hmm. we want to focus around building like a whole product ecosystem around it.
Okay.
So that it becomes easier for people to pick it up and use it, like analytics, like bot building systems.
So Beyond Code, GmbH, which, what does that stand for, by the way? I've never known that, GmbH. I assume it means like limited liability corporation,
yeah, right.
But the German
yeah.
version, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, let's test my German. Gesellschaft mit beschränkte Haftung.
Yeah.
The type of legal.
That's quite good.
Anyway. All right. Yeah. I did okay. So Beyond Code is a consultancy that builds primarily applications that have chatbots in them and also uses the finances that come from that to further build the ecosystem around Botman, which is a PHP framework agnostic library to make it easy to build the type of applications that Beyond Code is building for people for money.
Right.
Right?
Okay. Exactly.
And it makes sense. It's sort of like the, not quite, but like the discourse model where like, hey, there's a free, or the WordPress model. There's a free piece of software. There's also the way to pay us to do it. The money that you pay us to do it makes the free piece of software better.
Yeah.
Everything feeds and everything else. Okay. That totally makes sense. All right. So that's going forward. So a success of the next couple of years of your life would mean that the work that you're doing for consultancy work, the work you're doing for clients basically allows you to make Botman better. Is that
kind of
the general? So yeah. you mentioned analytics. You mentioned kind of understanding what's going on. Are there any other kind of like big kind of next goals or features or things that you want that you feel like you can share with us that aren't the secret sauce?
No, not that I can share them, no.
Okay, cool. But you got big plans. It's not
It's
not just sitting where it is. It's something you're gonna grow.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. I think that the ability to compellingly get someone excited about the possibilities with a chatbot obviously is going to be a big part of what you're doing. So I'm glad we had the opportunity for that. Like I said, I'm literally like going to get off this call and go like see how fast I can hack together something to send that one woman, you know, who went to church with me growing up, you know, Facebook Messenger notifications when my son's podcast goes out.
Okay.
So I'm super geeked about that. Okay. Let's see, what else? What do you do in your free time? I mean, so one of the things is that you had such a straight line through programming that I think that I want to know more about what is not programming you. So what motivates you? I know you got a family. I know you got, you know, one kid?
Yeah, one kid. Yeah.
One kid. And how old's your kid?
Four.
Four. Okay. So obviously, you know, spending time with your family is significant, but whether with your family or on your own, what do you do outside of coding? What motivates you? What excites you? What do you do when you're away from the computer?
I think I have to recalibrate myself a bit because when I was working at the consultancy, mm-hmm. what I was doing in the afternoon was Botman, and now
right.
I'm doing this during the day job. So
actually, I got to stop you a second. You keep mentioning the afternoon is your free time. What does your schedule look like?
So it's mostly 9 to 5.
So when you say in the afternoon, do you mean after 5?
Yeah, right.
Sorry,
in the evening. Yeah.
In the evening. Got
in
it. Okay.
Yeah.
So what you mean is basically your free time, hacking time. At your old job, you were doing consultancy during the day and then Botman stuff at night. But now that Botman's your day job, how do you reorient?
Yeah, I still have to figure that out myself.
Yeah, cool.
So I'm not that much of like a sport person or anything. Mm-hmm. So I think really my main motivation was to program. Still
you just love coding.
Yeah
cool.
And other than that, it's mostly besides my family, of course, playing some video games, but
yeah I'm not a gamer, but I gotta ask, what kind of games I don't even know what questions gamers ask. Is it PC or console? Is that the question they would ask? What game are you into?
No, it's consoles, but it's funny and also a bit sad that I just realize that I'm getting old because I'm no longer good at these games. I no longer can play these games longer. So
right.
I've always liked these big games that pull you in, like big RPGs kind of. Mm-hmm. But now with a kid, I don't really have the
time. You don't have that much time?
Yeah. No. And I don't want to play for, I don't know, 5 consecutive hours.
Right.
And if I come back after a few days, I don't want like an hour to find out where was I, what I'm supposed to do.
See, that's why I love Nintendo. That's one of many reasons why I love a Nintendo, because for people with families, Nintendo is good, A, because there's games that you can play with your kids and also like user interfaces you can play with your kids. But B, there's games that are like you can dip in and out. For
just pick them up and then, play for half an hour and then
even Zelda is an extremely immersive game. You can still pick it up for 20 minutes here or there. So
it's still that's also too big for me.
Zelda is. I mean, I can understand it.
Yeah.
I played more video games when I played through, I'm not done with Zelda, but I played more video games when I first got the Switch and Zelda than I have in years. And even so, it was 20 minutes here or there. Because of the Switch, I just put it down and it just pauses it. And so I would, but I hear you. Super Mario Odyssey is pretty small. And of course, Mario Kart I play with my son nearly every day. So.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Nice.
So now we have this rule that we play every other day. So, Yeah.
Every night became a problem. So I was like, we need to get off. The good thing is my son is super, super active. Like I was a lazy kid. Like I didn't ever do anything. I just want to sit around. My kid, if I let him, we would be outside running around every day.
So my son
I don't
too.
Have any problems. Yeah. Same way. Yeah.
Yeah. When I came home from work, it's usually the first thing that he would tell me was, okay, you can leave your shoes on. We go and go and play some soccer.
I love it.
Okay.
That's very cool. Yeah. I think my biggest bummer about the neighborhood we live in right now is that the best thing about it is all the houses are really close and everybody gets to know each other very well. So he's got tons of friends, but the bummer is the yards are so small that like there's nowhere for us to play without getting in the car and driving somewhere. Okay. Like play soccer or baseball or something like that. So, but what we end up doing is just running around in the house like crazy people anyway. So his favorite game right now.
Living
Go ahead.
Underneath. So,
so you can't do this
all the time.
Yep. No, my son's favorite game right now is turn on some music really loud, some like really hype pop music or something like that, and then run around and chase each other and, throw bouncy balls at each other or try to tickle each other or something like that while the music plays really loud. I'm like, okay. So,
haven't done that in a while.
Okay, so what keeps you from getting stuck when you're coding? Or what tools do you use, or what books or what languages, whatever? How do you get stuck, or how do you keep from just kind of like either on a single problem or on a single framework or single language? What broadens your perspectives? Like whether it's in the programming world, like some other programming language, or whether it's something about your family or your life, like what helps you keep your brain out of just the really narrow focus of I work in one language, one package all day long? Like what gives you inspiration?
So I think recently when we had in mind that we're going to start the company, I focused a lot on like the organizational things and on how to get this even up and running. And so during that time, I was not that much focused on code or on frameworks or anything else, because it also meant for me just to get out of the comfort zone and, become start a company and not have the safety as an employee. Yeah. So what I'm trying to tell is that during this time, I sort of stepped away from being too close to the coding world a bit.
Yeah.
And now I'm just catching up again. But I think it's mostly just talking to other people and exchanging with my business partner, things like that. It's not that I use other languages and look into them specifically to see new things. So it's not that I really have the plan on how to broaden my view.
Right.
I don't know. I think it just happens.
Yeah.
This way. Yeah. And if I'm stuck at a specific problem, I just try to go out for a bit and step away from the code.
Yeah. All right. So I feel like I promise every time that I'm not going to say I could talk for hours, and then I do every time anyway. So, oh well, I fail. I did it. We're nearing time, and so I don't want to start anything new and big. Are there any other big parts of you, your life, your motivation, or your work that you feel like we haven't got a chance to cover?
No, I think we covered the important parts, most of all.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like it. What's your favorite candy?
Candy. after the whole Christmas candy mess, we set ourselves as a family a goal to not eat any candy for a week.
I like that.
My son is doing great.
He's doing better than you, huh?
Yeah, right. I don't. I cheated, but he doesn't know. So.
All right. Well, hopefully he doesn't listen to this.
Well, he doesn't understand English, so.
There you go. That's the way to do it. Reveal your secrets in the other language.
Yeah. But other than that, favorite candy. I'm mostly into like some sour candy. So, like
what?
Skittles in sour. They're pretty good.
Really? Skittles sour. I had no idea.
Yeah.
All right. Skittles sour, favorite candy.
How about you?
Oh, I ask this question to people all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I know the answer. The first thing that came to my mind was Snickers. I think that I like candies with chocolate. And I think if it's chocolate plus some things that round it out, those are high on my list. I mean, I really like Almond Joys and Mounds as well. But I think Snickers is probably my top
one. Bread with Nutella, but that's not really candy. So,
it's basically candy. So
yeah.
It's funny. My wife likes to put Nutella on sweet things. I'm like, no. The Nutella is the sweet. I want it on bread or toast. Plain piece of multigrain bread. Put some Nutella on top of it. Good to go.
And peanut butter. And then you basically have Snickers.
Wait, do you put peanut butter and Nutella on the same thing?
Sure. I mean, that's literally like Snickers, right?
Oh my God. I had never thought of that. All right, last story, and then I got to let you go. When my dad worked for a German company when I was growing up, and he was the president of the U.S. distributor of a German-based company. So he would fly over to Germany pretty frequently, and he would bring Levi's jeans and peanut butter to Germany because it was hard for them to get, and he'd bring back German chocolate and Nutella because it was hard for us to get. And you can get Nutella in the grocery stores now, but back then you couldn't. And so every time Dad came home, we would get Nutella and we'd try to keep these couple jars of Nutella to last until the next time you went to Germany. So,
okay. So next time I see you, you get some Nutella.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of Nutella here, so we'll have to pick something else.
Yeah, but not the German one.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah. All right, Marcel, this was a ton of fun talking to you. Thanks for taking some time. Thank you for Botman. I'm seriously going to go distribute my son's podcast using it. So you can expect me to bother you with with requests for help sometime soon.
Thank you for inviting me.
So how can people follow you? And I guess go star Botman, but what does following up with you look like?
Well, I think the easiest way to connect with me is on Twitter.
All right. I'll make sure your handle's linked in the show notes. So.
Okay. Or if people want to talk about Botman, I have the Slack team of Botman where you can join.
I'll go.
I think we're nearly 500 people in there.
All right. We'll link that in the show notes too. Got it.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for your time. It was a pleasure talking to you. And till next time, everyone. See you later.
Bye.